Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on this fine Thursday morning by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. Chris, I am happy to report that the basketball is good. These finals are extremely fun, and all is well in the world. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. It's pretty easy to be in a good mood. Maybe Suns fans are not, but it was a pretty great game, man. It was a weird one, but I had to write last night anyway, so I wasn't really able to sleep. But that's one that would have had me ready for the next one anyway, the next game anyway. The one great thing is there's the rest, but the one sucky thing is like, man, we got to wait. It's almost like this is how I felt when Breaking Bad was going. And when it was in the last few weeks of Breaking Bad, like that episode was amazing, but now I have to know how it ends and how the next episode is going to go.
Yeah, I was at home on my couch and I was just like stupefied sitting there like 20 minutes after the game ended being like, what just happened? So much ridiculousness. I love games like this, man. I absolutely like this is like it sounds sad, but this is like what I live for. So I don't know if you feel the same way.
Someone DM'd me in the middle of the game and they're like, I just am not enjoying this. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and granted, there was a run in there where, like, the basketball was not fantastic. I think it's fair to say that. But it just felt like, you know, maybe this is, you know, how I feel when people tell me that they were out on Breaking Bad before they got through the first season, where I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, it's a pretty evenly matched series. I think we can pretty safely say that. I think after last game, it would have been pretty fair to say that. Even if Phoenix had won last night, it would probably still be fair to say that. So that person, needless to say, they messaged me back at the, you know, in the last quarter. They're like, this is amazing. So, you know, props to them for sticking with it. You know, not quite ready to forgive people that said that this was a horrendous matchup or that it was bad for the league, or bad for ratings, because unless you're a league executive, who gives a damn what the ratings are? Like, it's great basketball. It's two teams that are fighting. I don't know. We've had this conversation. It's very cool to see. It's very cool to see that one of these teams will come out of here with this. It's really cool to see Giannis kind of spreading his wings and playing this way. You know, when two rounds ago, you know, people were – no, I don't think anyone was ready to write him off, but people were calling him a fraud. And, you know, how can you win the MVP twice? And you're not a guy that takes shots at the end of the game. And, I mean, look at what he just did last night. Look at what Middleton did last night. It's amazing to watch. Very cool. Anyway, I can go on and on and on about the Knicks with the series. Let's do it.
We will, Chris. And I look forward to actually getting all the emails now to pump up the upcoming Breaking Bad Sopranos crossover pod that you and I are going to be doing at some point during the off season. And speaking of, before we get into today's show, I want to remind all of our listeners to keep sending in all the great emails that we got this week. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Openfloormail@gmail.com. They've all been so fantastic. And we'll try to read a few later on. But honestly, you know, I was telling you before we started recording, Chris, today's entire show will probably be devoted to Wednesday night's Game 4. It was an instant classic. It featured one of the most memorable individual plays that we'll ever see on a stage like that one. So I just want to, I guess, start right there. I have a bunch of questions I want to ask you, and you and I are going to actually rank the best plays from last night's game, which I don't even know how that's going to work because it's there's just too many. And yeah, so if the structure of this pod is able to withstand our deviations and where we go in our conversation, then we'll get to that. But just right now, finish this sentence for me, Chris. Game 4 of the 2021 NBA Finals was the most enjoyable high-stakes NBA game you've seen since...
I felt like this was almost a trick question because I'm actually going to say two rounds ago when the Bucks were playing the Nets... I know how strongly you felt about how important that series was mm-hmm. in terms of maybe whoever won it would come out of the, you know, the league as the champion. So, I mean, between that game 5 and, you know, game 6 and 7, I'll say that, you know, if we fully extrapolate the question, you know, when you say high stakes like that, meaning probably the finals, I'll go back to game 1 of Cavs Warriors in 2018 where, LeBron's got 51 and J.R. Smith dribbles the ball out after George Hill misses the free throw. Like, it kind of felt like that sort of swing where, you know, either kind of a surprising sort of win that really kind of, well, I won't even say surprising win, but just a win where, damn, you really needed that win. And now that you didn't get it, you're mm-hmm. done. And that's kind of how that would have felt for the Bucks. Obviously, you don't want to be down 3-1 going back to Phoenix for game 5. And obviously something of an early knockout blow if Phoenix gets that game. And so it had a little bit of that feel to it that the Bucks were able to kind of just stay in it and win a game like that where they were behind for most of the fourth quarter and then finished the comeback and, it, you know, yeah, so that's what I felt a little bit of yesterday. Not completely, but a little bit.
I think that's a good callback, and I actually overlooked the game 7 of the second round between the Nets and the Bucks when I was thinking about answering this question, and you're right. I mean, I thought that series was the finals. Obviously, injuries kind of screwed things up a little bit.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, game 7, game 5 of that series were just absolutely incredible basketball games. I guess I go back to, and I don't even know if the stakes were necessarily on the same level because this was a game 4 where if the Bucks lose, like it's over, right? Like they just lost at home. They're down 3-1 going into game 5 in Phoenix. I think that the series is over. The finals are probably completed there. Last year's finals were not great, but game 5 was awesome with Jimmy Butler's ridiculous performance. I remember that game was cool in the bubble, but that was, they were down 3-1 and it seemed inevitable that the Lakers would win. Just going even a little bit further back in 2019, game 5, yep. The Raptors were up 3-1. Lowry, I don't know if you remember this play, but Kyle Lowry had this like corner 3 at the buzzer that Draymond blocked that if Lowry made it, the Raptors just would have won the title. Instead, the Warriors pushed the series to 6 games, and I think that game is marred because of everything that happened with KD, but Klay Thompson was healthy at that point still, yeah. So I think that there was still stakes there, and it was a big finals game, 1-point margin. But yeah, that last night was just, it was terrific. Like, you're right. It was a weird game. I think weird is a word that I was getting in texts and DMs last night as it was going on. I was loving it, though, even when the basketball was kind of crummy, just because even though neither team could hit a shot and threes were not falling, like the margin was still really close, and you had a sense that at the end, especially with how Devin Booker was shooting the ball, and he was ridiculous. Chris Middleton had 10 points in like the final 3 minutes of the game. Like, he was on another level. So I teased at the top that you and I are going to try to rank the five most important plays, and I assume we're going to have a ton of overlap here, but okay. I guess, like, I'll just kick things off and just, I don't even think we'll be ranking these, because who's to say what play is more important than another?
Maybe the first one, we might, if we're in disagreement on that, man, I don't know.
All right. Let's screw chronological order. Okay. Let's not even bury the lead here. Giannis Antetokounmpo had the greatest defensive play. One of the greatest defensive plays in NBA Finals history.
Yeah.
I guess, like, just we'll start with your reaction when you saw it live. Did you kind of understand or grasp in the moment? Were you like, oh, this was the biggest play of Giannis's career? Or was it more, because, like, the play just flowed from there. And so just kind of what was your thought process as you were watching it happen?
It was one of those plays where I was kind of like, did he really just get that? And I'm someone, too, that, look, I get that. You know, I've seen a fair share of plays where someone's blocking a dunk, where we've seen Bam do it. You know, we saw Roy Hibbert do it against Melo. It's always kind of jarring to watch somebody actually block a play like that, particularly an alley-oop, which seems even more difficult to do that with. My first reaction was, that's an incredible play. And then watching the replay and seeing that Giannis basically did all that in like one motion. And not just that, but then watching the replay, watching just the still shots of the image, he was like 11 and a half feet in the air. I mean, he was like at the top of the square, you know, and I think the other thing, and this is not to take anything away from the block, because why would you want to? But it was also kind of interesting listening to what he said after the game of, to some extent, you know, I used a stopwatch to time how long it was from the pass to the block. It was 0.9 seconds, pretty much flat.
Can I stop you right there? Do you have an actual stopwatch? The ones that, you know, coaches will,
on
like
my
wrap
phone,
around
their... on my
okay,
phone.
Okay, okay, okay. I'm
not 76 years old.
You emailed me a rough draft of your story, or a final draft of your story, early this morning, and I was reading it, and you had the stopwatch. Shout out there to a stopwatch, and I was just picturing in my head, like, you sitting down and just like pressing it. And
I've never,
great.
I don't think I've ever quite owned a stopwatch, but maybe I'll try to find one at a Walgreens or something. Because I do always like timing stuff. I used to do this when I was on the Knicks beat, to time how long before Second Spectrum, all that stuff was around, to time how long Carmelo would hold the ball and jab step before he'd actually pass it or shoot it. But anyway, mm-hmm. 0.9 seconds, man. I mean, and that's from Booker throwing it to Giannis getting up there and basically meeting Ayton at the summit. And to watch him flip his hips and just kind of turn and jump and really charge up off of the leg that he just injured 2 weeks ago, and go up and get that ball was insane. But also, like, reading, I couldn't help but think about even my own criticism of Giannis and everyone else. You know, I wrote a story about this a couple of weeks ago when they were in the round against the Nets, and kind of how Giannis doesn't generally take the other team's best score. If he does, it's not for long stretches. It's just here and there. And that, you know, he's used as really one of the most dominant kind of, I'm going to take everything away sort of help defenders. This is the epitome of that. That Giannis can't make that play if you have him guarding Booker, who's lighting you up for 42. But he's the only person, certainly in that game, probably in the league, I'd like to think that nobody else can make that play, at least not, you know, with all the different things that went into it, who can make that play. And to notice that, oh, well, Booker was standing too far away to try to shoot with the one hand from that far away, even though Booker had been lighting the Bucks up with his left hand. With just his left hand for like three or four layups over the course of the game, Giannis recognizing that, okay, he's at the free throw line, so he's not doing that. So if he's coming up with this one hand and he's throwing anything toward the rim, it has to be a lob. To process that quickly, to turn and jump, and to be able to get, you know, another tall human's shot dunk, whatever you want to call it, from there. What was really fascinating is that Booker threw, I think it was a smart pass, but I think he threw it too far along the baseline, probably because of who Giannis is and how long Giannis is. But I also thought it was interesting that I saw a tweet going around. I know I retweeted it, that Booker threw a pass to Ayton earlier in the season like that too against the Bulls, and kind of did the same thing where he threw it too far along the baseline and Patrick Williams blocked Ayton trying to, you know, Ayton would have had to like cock it way back just to catch
right.
it and to try to dunk it. And so it's interesting that had it been a better pass, maybe it gets there because Ayton doesn't have to go as far to go get it and, you know, to try to get it to the basket. But then again, maybe Giannis just devours it. So Giannis still is probably changing that play, which is why I said I wasn't trying to discredit him. It's just an incredible, incredible play. I mean, I'm still in awe, but it's one of those things that you appreciate and even enjoy more when you watch the replay and watch it in slow-mo, because people aren't supposed to be able to do that quickly, covering that much space to get up that high, to do it after 2 weeks after an injury that we thought might keep him out of the finals entirely in that moment with a minute and a half left, mm-hmm. with Booker there having to try to cover the two of them. Just an incredible, incredible, incredible play.
Yeah, my former editor, Ricky O'Donnell over at SB Nation, tweeted out a clip of that Patrick Williams block. And I teased him a little bit. I said that, the pass was whack. That's why Patrick Williams got to the block.
That pass was even worse than the one. That
yeah.
I will exactly give you that. But it was kind of the same sort of thing.
Exactly.
He threw it too far to the side. Yeah.
100%. And, you know, when I was watching it, it was just like one of my first reactions, honestly, was, okay, yes, that was, you know, if the Bucks pull off this game. It was with like 1:30 left. They mm-hmm. were up two at the time. You're not counting Phoenix out just because of that one play, of course. But I was like, if the Bucks hold on and win, this is like, and especially if they go on to win the series, it's the greatest play of Giannis's career. And it really yep. speaks to his singularity as a superstar. There's no one else in the game. No disrespect to Bam Adebayo. No disrespect to, I'm trying to even think of, someone was in my mentions earlier today, Jonathan Isaac, sure, whatever. Shout out to Jonathan Isaac.
I saw that.
Yeah. But like, I'm thinking even historically, like KG could have probably maybe made that play. You know, prime Bill Russell, Hakeem Olajuwon. Like, we're talking about just the greatest defenders in the history of the sport. And, you know, you talk about like him as a help defender. It's like, in that situation, he's not even really a help defender. Yeah, ESPN's Mike Schmitz tweeted this out, but he's playing the cat and mouse game in drop coverage in the pick and roll, where he has to basically guard two people at the same time. And once the ball leaves Booker's hands, it's just about impossible. If you watch every single lob that Booker or CP throws to DeAndre Ayton, looks like that. It goes over the head of the drop man. Just ask Brooke Lopez, ask Bobby Portis, ask whoever's in that situation in this series. Like, it's a yeah. dunk every single time. So for him to have the energy, for him to have the awareness, for him not to foul, the timing, like, everything was just perfect at the end of a game. Like, I would fall over. Like, it's just like the coordination, everything about it was just, it was so spectacular. I can't say enough things about it. I saw some people tweeting that, of course, he blocked it. He had to. Shout out to Skip Bayless. Like, just stop watching basketball if you don't appreciate that. Like, I don't know, what are we even talking about?
Exactly.
Okay, so what, like, there were so many different plays beyond, like, after this one, before. I think the other big play from the final, I want to say, what, 4 minutes, is the Devin Booker no call.
That so was let's just number get into two on my list. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into that for a second. You wrote about that quite a bit in your piece. Why don't you pick it up? Like, I was stunned, honestly, when there was no whistle. Mike Breen on the call basically says Devin Booker fouls Jrue Holiday. It was that obvious of a call. And right after James Capers, you had this in your piece. I'll just say real quick, James Capers, the official, was on running up the right sideline, and I've watched this play in slow motion a few times, and I'm not saying that James Capers is a liar, and I'm not saying that I can ever see his perspective on the sideline in real time where these guys are going 100 miles an hour. But he says that he did not see Devin Booker's right arm on Drew Holiday's waist. And it's like, sure, that was one part of the foul. The other part was like he kind of like hugged him in midair and he like collided with him. And you just see that call a million times during an NBA game in a situation like that. So I guess like what was your takeaway when you just saw it?
I mean, it was closer to being a flagrant than a no call. I mean, that's one thing. You know, I compared it in my story to like a defender in football, a defensive back, seeing that someone's got the ball in their possession and they're just trying to knock the crap. Like that was kind of how it looked.
Like he was trying to foul him.
Right. Yes. That was actually my thing, Michael, is that it watching it, it looked like an intentional foul to me. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, Booker had two or three take fouls over the course of the game. Anyway, it's not beyond, you know, reason that he was trying to intentionally foul him and wrap him up there just to prevent him from getting a basket.
Mm-hmm.
And that he just forgot that he had five fouls, which is kind of inconceivable given that he had just sat out, I think five minutes, from like, you know, 10:55 to like 5:55 or something like that. And then this was with 3:50. So it was like he'd only been back in the game for 2 minutes. But it actually looked more to me like he was trying to intentionally foul. And, you know, it's interesting because I feel like there's a segment of fans, and I don't really know where I stand on this, that people want officials to be more careful about calling a sixth foul, to not alter the game too much. I can understand that. I don't know what's going through officials' minds, where if they are cognizant of that, you know, they always want refs to be cognizant of that with technicals and a second technical, mm-hmm. and not just throwing somebody out. So I get that part of it. If that's what this was, and then you get a late whistle because of it, okay. They didn't call anything. And regardless of whether James Capers saw it, and to your point, yeah, he was there. I mean, he could have made that call. And from a couple different angles, I would think you could have called something. Even if he's not the one calling it, even from the other end of the court, I would like to think that a ref could have made that call. It was just so blatant. To me, one of the most interesting things was not only Breen, Jackson, and Van Gundy, like immediately, like being shocked that there was no call. I mean, the arena had like an audible reaction to the play that wasn't even booing necessarily at first. It was like confusion. That
right, because Giannis had the putback layup. So, right, so it was like, what is happening?
Right. You know, and I love my buddy Jay Adonde, but he, you know, he tweeted something, and I don't know that I've ever disagreed with more, where he tweeted, well, maybe that's the best case scenario where, look, it was a foul, but they didn't call it, but at least Milwaukee got the 2 points out of it, so it kind of is a wash. It's like, that's not a wash, because if Phoenix wins that game, and Booker has a role. I mean, even if Booker's just standing in the corner and does nothing, he's still Devin Booker, who had 38 points at that point in the game. So, I mean, that was something that potentially could have won the finals for Phoenix. I mean, obviously they would need to get one more game, but that would have potentially changed the course of history if the Bucks don't win that game. So at that point, and I kind of said this in the story, I don't have a rooting interest in this series or generally anyway. But I wanted the Bucks to win just so that you're not ruining the rest of the series. Just because that felt so unfair and so blatant. And not to mention, I didn't even put this in my story. I tweeted it last night. Booker sat down like once or twice thinking that he'd fouled out.
In the game, there was some weird kerfuffle that Budenholzer addressed in his press conference. I still don't really understand what happened, but
yeah, I mean, the guy had at least seven or maybe eight fouls. You know, maybe there's one that was questionable. I think the one that he got his fifth on was like questionable, but that just can't happen. And I mean, like I said, the league is really fortunate, because if your mindset is what fans hope for, that refs are going to be more judicious about a sixth foul call. Again, that's fine, but it can't result in you not blowing the whistle when something is that blatant. And I don't care if you don't have the angle to make it. That's what you've got two other people on the court for. Because you could have been at the other end of the floor and recognized that that was a foul. And right. Everybody else recognized that.
Right, and Courtney Kirkland is again, I really watched this play a million times. When I say that, I'm not exaggerating. Courtney Kirkland's running up the opposite sideline, another official. And I know that his responsibilities are different, and he's not necessarily, I don't know if he's necessarily watching the play on the ball, but his angle was also really clean, especially if you want to talk about the hand on the waist from behind. And
yeah,
I mean, it was a collision in midair. Like, it's like their bodies hit each other. That's just a foul every single time. I mean, I don't, you know, Suns fans are probably a little upset right now. I mean, this isn't a moment or anything, but I just want to briefly say that Devin Booker had like one of the better games you'll ever see in an NBA Finals offensively. Like, oof. The shot quality was trash, frankly. Like, the shots he was taking, a lot of them were really bad. A lot of really tough, this is what he does. Like, they're just really tough shots, but he usually hits them. But 17 for 28, doesn't make a three, only takes three threes, 8 for 9 from the line, 42 points. He had 4 points on 2 for 5 shooting after the no call with Holiday. So it's not like he disappeared or anything. And he could have, as you said, he could have impacted the end. But beforehand, sure, he was just like, lights out. Like, the elevation, the way he controls his body, the strength. There was one play where he was in a crowd with Drew. They had to switch Drew Holiday onto him at one point. And Drew, we're going to talk about him, but he was all over Chris Paul in this game, doing a terrific job. And they had, wow, to put Chris Middleton onto CP and move Drew onto Booker towards the end. And Booker had this play late in the fourth where, you know, he just like out muscles Drew, gets into the paint. Giannis is coming from he's contesting from the backside, and Booker still hits the floater from like, I don't know, 7-8 feet. Like, just he's a professional scorer. He's one of the best scorers in the league. It's really awesome to see him have this type of performance, especially after how he struggled in the last game. I mean, I was expecting a bounce back, but the type of game he had was, that was like, you just don't see that in the NBA Finals very often. So I'd have to just shout out Devin Booker for what he did.
Sure. I mean, there's another play that he had. You know, what I like about him, what on nights where he's not shooting well, is probably really frustrating to watch as a fan. He's had, if you remember back a couple of years ago when he was with Team USA, and they were doing that, or that USA basketball stuff they had over the summer, where they do that drill where you can only dribble 3 times. And he's, you watch him play and you could tell he'd be really good at that drill. But he had a play last night where Connaughton was guarding him and there was so much contact, not necessarily a foul, but it was like, it would have been a foul if you weren't letting these guys just play. And it was in the right corner and he had no space and he just drills the shot. Just a beautiful shot. Doesn't hit anything but the net. And all of his shots more or less were like that. And what was so interesting, and the reason I was saying this game was so great, certainly in the second half, he was 7 for 7 in the third quarter. He was 7 for 7 in the second half up until he got that fifth foul where Monty Williams essentially had to sit him. And thank goodness that he did, since dude was like intentionally fouling, even though he had 5 fouls. But the fact that he does all that and then has to sit, it just, so much drama in the game to have that happen. Then to have Phoenix's whole engine get a fifth foul with 10 minutes left in the game, almost 11 minutes left in the game. You knew it was going to put Phoenix in a tough spot. I think they were up 6 when he had to sit. But this was just a great game. Maybe the first half was a little bit ugly, but you had to completely appreciate his third quarter. You had to completely appreciate Middleton's, you know, fourth quarter and the end of that and the 40-point performance, which was not, again, not the prettiest, you know, it was not the most efficient necessarily. But Milwaukee has a little bit of I know they shoot a ton of threes. I know they have Giannis and I have Middleton. I know that, you know, when those two and Holiday have it going, that they look unstoppable. But they have a grinded out offense. And Middleton, I think, is probably the clearest case of that, where he's going and getting, he's kind of doing the dirty work to get some really, he's one of the best tough shot makers in the league. But part of what we see the flip side of that is that when he struggles, he really struggles like he did in the last couple of games. I figured it's so funny. I was telling you, I had a separate story planned for yesterday and I had in my lead that, you know, I had Middleton. I was like, Middleton can go off for 40 at any given time. And then I scratched it out and I was like, 35. He doesn't get 40 that often. And I took it out. And you know, I was texting with you and Rohan about how I thought Booker was going to have a decent bounce back. And I didn't know if it would be enough for Phoenix to win the game. So that played out. I didn't think Middleton was going to go for 40. I certainly didn't think the majority of them were, or a chunk of them were going to come in the fourth like that. I didn't see yesterday coming, the way it ended and the way it finished. I also did not see Chris Paul turning the ball over as much as he did. Again, he's got almost as many turnovers now in these four games in the finals than he's had, you know, in the postseason combined, you know, the rest of the postseason combined, which, you know, hats off to Drew Holiday. just insane, you know, how much work he's putting in. He was more or less involved in all five of the turnovers that Chris Paul had yesterday. He was defending him on the first three, and then he was either the helper or the guy that was, you know, that actually made the steal on the other two. And so it's, you can't really say enough about how much pressure he put on him full court over the course of the game. And, you know, he's a lot bigger than Chris Paul, which, you know, Chris Paul's not like he's unused to seeing guys that are bigger than him, but for the whole game, 94 feet with that sort of intensity, with that level of defense, you know, he's not normally seeing that. Because normally if you've got someone of that caliber, you can throw on someone, they're going to be on Booker part of the time, not Chris Paul the whole time. So it was, that had a huge role in the game. And it kind of makes me disappointed when I see people just ripping Drew Holiday for 4 of 20, which, yeah, he did not shoot well at all. But I don't think Eric Bledsoe's given you this performance defensively on Chris Paul. I just don't.
Yeah, there's so many different directions we can go in right now off of everything that you just said. I'll quickly just shout out an offensive rebound that Drew had with about a minute to go. It was right after Giannis's block. And it didn't, the Bucks didn't score after that play.
Yep.
But Drew's offensive rebound in a crowd, and CP said in his postgame press conference, he specifically said that he feels like they need to box out better. And I think he was particularly probably thinking about that play where he's on Drew Holiday under the rim and Drew Holiday just skies over him, overpowers him, gets
and then dribbled it all the way back and wore down the
burns clock. Yep, exactly. Burns like 20 seconds off the clock, brings it down to 40 seconds. And then I guess this is just a really good time to talk about CP. He had 5 turnovers. Suns had 17. The Bucks had 5 also. So CP had as many turnovers as the entire Milwaukee Bucks team. Nobody on the Bucks had more than 1 turnover. Just like incredible poise from them.
I wonder when the last time that happened is where Chris Paul had as many turnovers as the other team.
That's a great stat that I wish I looked up before.
Me too. Damn it.
One of our listeners
big
will.
Stat heads to where we should have yes, known to do that.
Absolutely, 100%. But yeah, so CP, like the turnover that he had, the last turnover that he had. So there were a few that. Okay, so the one of the bigger ones that he had, I thought, if you go back and watch the play that led to Booker's non-call, that led to the Giannis putback layup. Was a play offensively where the Suns are running their Spain pick and roll and CP gets downhill. They crowd him and he throws it back to Booker, thinking Booker's going to be wide open on a play, basically like a pet play for them where he always flares open at the top and Giannis gets his fingertip on it. And just another insanely good defensive play from Giannis, who was absolutely everywhere. There was another play where CP got downhill about a minute later, crossed up Giannis in the pick and roll, and was in a situation where he looked like he was maybe trying to draw a foul, and Giannis did not take the bait and instead just like smothered his layup. CP had to take this really awkward reverse layup, missed it, and that led to one of the biggest shots of, if not the biggest shot of Pat Connaughton's career, the other way in transition, a corner three that put them up 2 with like 3 minutes to go. But specifically, the turnover that I think a lot of people are going to be looking at is the one with about 34 seconds left. The play where CP just kind of stumbles and falls over, and the game is obviously not even close to out of hand at that point. I think the Bucks were still only up 2, I want to say. Yeah, they were up two. Drew picks him up full court, of course, and kind of pressures him the entire way. And they try to run the side pick and roll with Ayton. Giannis is dropping. CP tries to cut back as he does middle, and he just falls over. And I don't know, like, if this is a bigger thing with him. Like, is this like an age wear and tear? I don't know. He just had such a challenging performance out of him, and his point totals have been going down in every game in this series, and I think Jrue Holiday has a lot to do with that. But like, I don't want to say concerned, because CP could come out and drop 36 in game five and 36 and 12 assists or something like that. Who knows? He's just a great player. But like, I don't know. What did you think when you saw CP stumble over and
I mean,
basically pop the game away?
I think anybody, and even Breen's reaction to it, that play. Breen was fantastic last night, by the way. I mean, not that he isn't at any point, but just the way he reacted to all the big plays, including that one. The tone in his voice when he made that stumble was almost kind of like, wow, it's happening again. At least that was the way it sounded to me. I mean, you spend enough time around the league, you're a big enough fan, you know how many moments he's been on the doorstep of really putting something away, particularly playoff series. That was what this felt like. A little premature to say that. Obviously, I'm not saying that the series is over, that he gave anything away, but you know, a moment where, you know, for people that think that he has a history of choking, which I don't think that's completely fair. He certainly had moments where he hasn't come through before, but he's also had moments where he's won stuff for his teams. That if that's your perception of him, that this fits in that box. You know, he had a rough game shooting it, taking care of it. You know, and it's one of those things where there probably are some things you can do. I don't know that he has to be the guy that brings the ball up the floor all the time. You know, maybe if you're bringing him off the ball to come up and get the ball and making Jrue Holiday run through even more screens, although, you know, at the same time, maybe Jrue Holiday is saving energy from not having to play 94 feet. I'm not sure. Maybe you can go through Booker more, although you don't want to wear him down too much, by having him bring the ball up. Maybe there's stuff you can do with campaign, but at the same time, you know, do you want to burn him when you're only going eight deep to begin with? So there are potential things you can toy with and play with. But, you know, to me, I think a lot of the credit deserves to the Bucks and certainly Jrue Holiday specifically. It feels more like that than anything. I don't think Chris Paul is someone that's in his own head. I just think a stumble is a stumble, but it, you know, certainly an ill-timed stumble and something that we've seen from him before. But yeah, I'm not ready to write him off necessarily. I mean, it's also helpful, I think, for him as we talk about how brutal it is to have to wait for these games. If the time off is helpful for anybody, you would imagine as Chris Paul, who, you know, has dealt with a number of different injuries in this postseason, who even last night, I think we were hearing them talk about him favoring his hand, which I think a lot of us noticed in game three, him reaching down at his left hand. So I don't know. I'm not sure if it's just one thing or if it's multiple things or if it's just Jrue Holiday. It could be any one of them. It could be a little bit of all of them, but I'd be a little bit surprised if this series were to go six or seven if he just doesn't have a single stretch or a single game where he's looking more like himself, where he gets back. You know, even if he's not scoring a ton, I'm not used to seeing him have seven assists, five turnover games. You know, we're for most of the playoffs, we're seeing him nine assists, one turnover, you know, stuff like that, where he's still
They were bad
facilitating drives.
turnovers too. They were
Some
like
really
bad
bad ones
turnovers.
where, I mean, to the point where you're watching it and you're thinking that Holiday might be in his head a little bit because he's just throwing the ball to ghosts. Or, you know, we talk about how he has eyes in the back of his head where he's throwing the ball to places he expects guys to be and they're just not there and the ball just goes out of bounds. Like, you don't see those mistakes from him very often, let alone five of them in one game, let alone 17 in four games. So I would expect him to be a little bit better, but you know, I thought that coming off the last game too, as far as taking care of the ball. I'd like to think that, you know, with it being a huge emphasis now and him seeing that in particular, you know, maybe we'll talk about this later, not only did they lose the turnover battle 17-5, they lost, you mentioned before, Holiday getting that offensive rebound. They lost the offensive rebounding battle 17-5 as well. Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about, I think, a 19-shot difference for either team, where I think the Bucks took 97 shots and the Suns got 78. It's really, really hard to win that way, particularly if you're not catching fire from three. So, I'm sure Monty Williams was already making a big deal of it, but now, you know, two games of drilling at home, being back at home in front of your home crowd, I would expect them to be a little bit better about that. Just because, you know, it's not often you see Chris Paul turning the ball over. And five turnovers is like not a lot for James Harden, for Russell Westbrook, but for Chris Paul, it's, you know, it's like having a 12 turnover game or something like that.
So one adjustment that Julius Hodge, NC State, great, had on Twitter last night was to just play Campaign instead of Chris Paul. And if you know, you know why Julius Hodge is not a great fan.
That would be CP. My take if I got hit in the balls by him too.
Yes,
exact same take I would have.
100%. So real quick, I want to talk about Middleton for a second, but you mentioned offensive rebounding. In this series, the Phoenix Suns have 28 offensive rebounds. The Milwaukee Bucks have 57. Just like staggering. And PJ Tucker, this is where PJ Tucker will like not score a point for three straight games, but this is why he's on the floor. This is why he's in the starting lineup. When they put CP on him, he's crashing the glass on, I think it was Devin Booker's fifth foul, I want to say. Booker was trying to box out PJ Tucker and ended up hip checking him out of bounds. And that was a situation where PJ's trying to go for an offensive rebound and get a second chance opportunity. And so plays like that, they really, really, really matter. And I don't know what adjustments you make to impact that, honestly. In terms of, are we just going to pack the paint and gang rebound and open or leave ourselves vulnerable behind the 3-point line? Or I try to play as big as possible, but you can't really because you don't have Saric and you're not going to play Frank Kaminsky. He's not like a great rebounder for someone his size.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the adjustment is. And Monty Williams just keeps saying in these clips, like, we're getting outworked, we're getting out hustled, but like, you're not as big as the other team. The other team has Brooke Lopez. The other team has Bobby Portis, who's been really good in the offensive glass. The other team has Giannis. Like, physically, Giannis is, he's Giannis. I don't even know what to say.
And even the smalls, I mean, Connaughton gets in there and Holiday gets in there. I mean, so it's not even, I mean, yeah, the size part of it certainly matters, but it's just kind of a, you know, I mean, Campaign, bless his heart, he's not, you know, particularly Julius Hodge was, like we said, there's probably a bias there, but I don't know that these guys off the bench, you know, save maybe Torrey Craig, are really the sorts of guys that mix it up to where they're just going to be in there causing havoc from that standpoint. And it's funny that obviously Torrey Craig has the Bucks background as well. I don't know that there are a whole lot of answers, but I mean, it's been massive in the series. And quite frankly, when we talk about, you asked me earlier last week, how much does the Saric absence matter in this series? He's not a great offensive rebounder, but I do think that sort of thing would be helpful here. He's mm-hmm. a guy that has size that you can play and give minutes to that isn't named Frank Kaminsky, who, you know, just has some size and frankly would help you a little bit here. I mean, the Bucks
even
lost.
Just boxing out. It's not, it's like, you don't have to grab the ball. You
not necessarily.
Your
yeah.
man from getting it.
And I think the Bucks won game three and second chance points, I think 20-2, which, I mean, it's just really, really hard to win games like that. It doesn't have to be second chance points, but anything where you're losing the battle 20-2, bench points, second chance points, fast break points, obviously free throws, anything. I mean, it's just really, really hard to win. So I don't know how you adjust it. You know, to some extent, the turnovers are like that too. You just have to drill it home and, you know, enough of these guys are veterans. Even the guys that aren't have played like veterans for this whole postseason, but it's got to be better. And like you said, it's got to be top of mind just to try to, you know, to keep them off the glass a little bit. You know, the Bucks are tough. They're also really athletic. Even when they take Brooke Lopez off the floor, you know, Giannis is not your typical forward as far as what it is to keep him off the glass. Particularly, you know, I feel like it's even more difficult in some ways because if Middleton has it going like that, Giannis is going to come in from either side and, you know, and be able to try to make a play on the ball. So it's a task, but it's one that you've got to be better at than Phoenix has been.
Yeah, Giannis is basically a center. I mean, just call him that. I don't even, it's positionless, whatever, but he functions as a center as well as anybody who does not play or start as a center in the NBA easily. And his, I know that the Phoenix Suns don't like to get to the rim a lot, but only 18% of their shots in game four, according to Cleaning the Glass, were at the rim. That's like an absolutely atrocious number, even for them. And when they do get to the basket, Giannis or Lopez or whoever have just done a really good job contesting everything and making everything really difficult. So, yeah, like I guess, as I said before, I kind of want to get into Chris Middleton's performance for two quick seconds. He was like fantastic down the stretch after the non-call on Devin Booker with a few minutes to go. He had 10 points. Some of those were at the free throw line. Some of them were in transition layups.
Insane.
But there were two jumpers that he hit off of the exact same action, and an empty side pick and roll with Giannis setting the screen off a sideline out of bounds where, you know, Giannis fakes a DHO with Jrue Holiday, and then it just goes right into a DHO pick and roll with no one in the strong side corner to help on Giannis's roll. And they ran that twice in a row, both times. The first time, Middleton is coming from the right side to his left, and he has Ayton dropping. Ayton's basically doing a really good job taking away Giannis, and Mikal Bridges is hounding him. And he does this little like nifty in and out dribble back to his right hand and just hits like an impossible fall away over Mikal Bridges' like really good contest. And that tied the game with 2:10. They were actually down at that point. And then I think it was the next possession or two possessions later, same thing on the other side of the floor, fake DHO with Jrue Holiday into a DHO, little pick and roll with Giannis. And he pulls, Chris Middleton gets middle at about the free throw line, pulls up, dagger over Ayton's contest. Right. I thought those two shots were like, that's just like what the finals are all about. You got to hit tough shots if you want to win games like this. And all credit to Giannis's block. But, you know, Chris Middleton's 40 points, particularly towards the end with those jumpers, are as good of reason as any of why Milwaukee won the basketball game.
Oh, easy. I mean, it's I'm not going to belabor the Batman Robin BS. Not today.
So stupid.
I love that Zach Lowe got Perk about that, where he brought it up and Perk seemed to get upset about it. But I mean, again, you know, Middleton is one of the best tough shot makers in the game, where I feel like no matter what, he can knock down at least a third, close to 40% of those shots, which I feel like the average person might make 20 to 25% of them. I mean, just no space. Mm-hmm. I think in some ways those shots are actually more difficult than some Booker's, considering the circumstance, you know, granted, Middleton's a little bit taller, but just there's just no space. And everybody knows that he's the guy that can most easily get his own jump shot. You know, Giannis, well, I mean, Giannis can get his own jump shot because you're going to give him his own jump shot. You're going to let him have all of the jump shots. But Middleton's a good shooter, and so you don't want him to get that shot. You don't want to let him get to his spots. It sounds crazy, and obviously he's not – as good at getting to the basket is Booker, but you know, what we saw Booker doing with his left hand, Middleton's every bit the creator, just as far as getting his own shot. And when we talked about that game that they were doing in USA Basketball about the three dribble stuff, Middleton is every bit as good as Booker is, you know, with maybe a little bit more of a weapon being taller. But you know, the challenge there is that everybody knows he's the guy you want to take that shot, because Giannis, you know, is not the guy you're going to go to in the fourth quarter when you need to get a mid-range jumper. So guys are gutting out for him, and he still knocks those down. And it's just astounding to watch, particularly when he gets in a rhythm where he's doing it. And then that stat, I don't know if you saw it, I'm sure you probably did, from Stats and Information at ESPN, that he has as many game tying and go ahead fourth quarter baskets is anybody in postseason history, I think was the stat.
I did not see that. That
and
is
this
very
postseason,
wild.
Now granted, they've, you know, they went seven and, you know, the semifinal round. But I mean, I venture to guess they have not played more playoff games than any team in NBA history. And I'm sure that stat is only through a certain amount of years, given that, you know, the stat tracking and how different it is now. That's just still a really mind-boggling stat. Doesn't make him Batman necessarily, because Batman, the Batman that I saw last night, climbed up 19 stories to go get that block with 9 cents of a second time, you know, lead time. But I mean, it's really hard to be a shot maker in situations like what Middleton was doing yesterday. And you know, does it come and go, and is it a little bit inconsistent? Yeah, but I mean, taking that shot is going to make you inconsistent. Ask Devin Booker, ask anybody. But, you know, to knock it down that consistently at the end of the game with that much on the line, that series is over if they lose. And the fact that he's able to just drill that repeatedly was something to see.
If Middleton played for the New York Knicks and was, like, regularly on league fits, he'd be, like, the biggest star in the league. Like, if he had, like, an outward personality and he played in a humongous market, like, his game is just, it speaks to just, like, his game. And I think he's still, the fact that he was not an all-star this year, which back when, I remember back when the teams were announced, him not making it was, like, a kind of a shock to me. I was kind of like, what? This dude is,
yeah.
This dude, he's an epitome of an all-star. Look at the, like, he's 50, yeah. 40, 90 with the shots that he takes. Like, come on. Real quick before, I want to ask you what your biggest kind of statistical takeaway was. And we've gone over a bunch of stats, so if you've already said it, let me know. But I wanted to quickly run by you. I forgot to say this when we were discussing Giannis's block, but I feel like plays like that deserve nicknames. And we can't call it the block because LeBron's in the finals. I feel like that's the block, right? So I wanted to throw, what about the recovery? Is the recovery a good nickname for that play, or is that like...
It sounds like a bad Eminem album.
Okay.
Good Lord. We're not doing the recovery, the 12-step program. No, we're not doing
so
that
you're
one
just,
either, Michael.
You're putting that, you're stamping that one down.
Yeah.
That's not going to take off. Okay, good. I wanted to, you know, crowdsource it real quick with you on the pod in our private one-on-one discussion before I tweeted or anything like that. So thank you for saving me from embarrassment, Chris.
Very welcome.
but yeah, I hope that someone smarter than me comes up with a cool nickname for it, because it was,
I mean, that's that play when we talk about, I mean, the guy's nickname is Greek Freak. I mean, that again is just the epitome. You're not supposed to be able to do that. And it's funny when you said, when you were talking about who all can do that, my first thought was Adebayo, and I maybe he gets that. I'm not convinced that he gets there that quickly, that he does that either. But, I mean, if you had told me that Giannis was going to do that, if you remember the was it the Second Spectrum stuff where, you know, Zach Lowe did that piece on the ghosts and where ideally a defender would be placed and
the
where
Raptors.
They would go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like, if you were to show me one of those ghost versions of what happened there and an ideal defensive play that someone's making that play, ideally, but it's more of a theory and a theoretical thing than actually someone doing it. I'm not sure before you showed me that I would have said that Giannis could make that play. I mean, it was just a really, really insane play to watch. And I mean, it was a freakish play to watch, particularly when you consider that, you know, Giannis, his leg was not well 2 weeks ago. You know, it makes no sense that the play was made and that he got there in time. It would have been a good effort and good contest, even if he hadn't blocked the shot, but he did.
So do you have any wonderful, brilliant, genius stats for me, Chris?
I think I'm going to go with the one I mentioned a little bit earlier, where between turnovers and rebounds, you know, offensive rebounds, that both were 17-5 in favor of the Bucks. I just don't think you – I mean, it's – almost credit to the Suns for keeping the game that close on the road, despite losing both of those that badly, without shooting lights out from three. But I mean, Booker had, when he left the game, with 10 minutes left. So maybe this is another stat. When he left the game with 11 minutes left, 10:55 left in the fourth, he had 38, and none of his other teammates were in double figures yet. So, I mean, the fact that they hung around in a game like that with those sorts of deficits on the glass and turnovers, it almost doesn't add up for me that they were even that close to winning the game to begin with, that they were within, you know, a Giannis block or, you know, CP3 stumbling over of tying the game or winning the game to begin with. It doesn't really compute for me that they were that close on the road. Maybe if they'd been at home, but they were on the road. So, you know, by no means does it rule them out. Does it mean that they can't get game five? Pretty bad loss, you know, considering just the nature of it and the fact that they had the lead for most of that fourth quarter. But, you know, I think that would be my stat, is just that how singular Devin Booker was on offense, that he, I mean, he was doing the whole thing in the third quarter, and kind of amazing that they were that close, looking at just how much he had to do with them also being on the ropes in terms of turnovers and offensive rebounding.
Yeah, we have mentioned offensive rebound and we've mentioned turnovers. If you look at the transcripts of every post-game interview that every player did, both coaches did after last night's game, they all talked about those two stats like to a man. Every single person mentioned them. They were absolutely critical. And I mentioned that the Bucks only had five turnovers in the entire game. And their turnover rate was 5.2%, according to Cleaning the Glass, which is the second lowest turnover rate that Milwaukee has had in the Budenholzer era, which just wow. Like that's three seasons of basketball. And I wonder if the Suns are going to look at a stat like that and react to the point where it changes up their defensive strategy a little bit. Maybe they want to be a little more aggressive. I know they doubled Giannis in the post when they moved Ayton off of him at one point because they were worried about foul trouble, and they were kind of being aggressive that way and really showing bodies. But are they going to be more risky than?
Do you think they should be? Because I don't think they should be. Like I granted,
they could have easily won this game.
Right, they could have won the game. I mean, again, it was on the road. This was a weird game in the sense that Holiday took more shots than Giannis did. He took 20 and made four of them, which that's a good thing if you're
not a recipe for success.
No, it's not. And Giannis, you know, frankly, was not taking that many shots. Giannis was not handling the ball really at all in the fourth quarter because Middleton was taking it over. Middleton in isolation scenarios is, I mean, ISOs are one of the reasons ISOs are favorable in late game stages for teams, is that you're less likely to turn the ball over. So, I mean, there are all sorts of reasons. I mean, five is still a really low number. I don't care what sort of offense you're running or who you're running it through, but to try to speed them up, to make them turn it over more. No, you live with the idea of Jrue Holiday taking 20 shots, particularly on a night where he's not hitting anything. Even his layups, I mean, he missed 7 of his 10 layups by my count. So you pray for that to happen again, and you just execute better on offense and you execute better on the glass so that you're not getting beat by second chance points. Cause that wasn't, I mean, the turnovers, they still almost won, only turning Milwaukee over 5 times. That wasn't the problem in my mind.
Yeah. I don't think I agree with you. I don't think it's replicable for Milwaukee to be that like safe with the ball. I mean, I feel like we've covered pretty much every big moment from the game. I mean, I guess like
I'll give you one more.
Oh, okay, wonderful. Throw it at me.
One more, two more. Nothing that I think needs that much. I just want to shout out Connaughton though. He hit a couple of threes last night, and I thought it was interesting looking back at the play-by-play and then going back and watching the video. He each time Milwaukee took the lead, I guess not the very last time, but Milwaukee took one lead in the third quarter. They went ahead 70-69. It was on a Connaughton three. And then they had like that long climb up the mountain to finally come back and take the lead. I guess I wouldn't say midway through the fourth, but like toward the end of the fourth, maybe 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left, whatever it was in the fourth. And Connaughton hit a three there to put them up by two, 97-95. So just really timely baskets. I mean, he just kind of seems to be in the right place at the right time. Giannis has a really, I mean, you read a little bit about their friendship and everything. Giannis has a great rapport with him and seems to, I feel like when Giannis kicks the ball out, that's always who he's finding, seemingly. Maybe the one guy you feel like you can somewhat leave alone. But just a couple of massive shots that he hit to kind of, I guess, not keep them in it because they were in it. But, you know, Middleton was already doing so much. Giannis is not probably capable of doing all that much more than what he was doing, certainly with the effort he was giving. Holiday couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. That shot has to kind of come from Pat Connaughton. And again, if you're Phoenix, that might be who you want taking the shot. Maybe Holiday yesterday, but generally speaking, if you live with somebody being open, it might be him that you're okay with trying that with. And he made them pay for it a couple times. And so just a couple of huge shots that weren't daggers necessarily, but go ahead threes. And the, you know, toward the end of the third, and then again in the midway through the fourth.
Yeah. So that Connaughton three in the corner, I have it in my notes here because it was just, it was huge, absolutely huge. Came with 3:10 to go in the game.
Was it that late? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when you go back and watch that play, really good perception by you about Giannis and the connection he has and the relationship on court and off court he has with Pat, because he's running, he's kind of trailing the play. Middleton's dribbling up the left side in transition, and Middleton hits Giannis right around the top of the key. And Giannis doesn't hesitate for a split second, throws a no look bounce pass to Connaughton that's on time, on target. And that's how Connaughton hits that corner three. So that pass was just like one of the, it's like one of those tiny, seemingly insignificant plays, but like he had to make a pass just like that. That was very, very difficult. Not a lot of players can make it. He did. And Pat Connaughton hits the three. So you're exactly right. That was a humongous play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's been really big for that team. You know, obviously they've missed DiVincenzo. I think that's goes without saying when you look at Holiday struggle offensively and quite frankly, just the defensive responsibility when they were getting their asses kicked by Chris Paul earlier in the series. It would have been another body you could have thrown on him to not tire Drew Holiday out, you know, and, you know, I think that needs to be said that part of the reason Holiday might be that off, it's difficult to kind of do it all. You know, it's difficult to ask Giannis to do it all. It's difficult to ask Drew Holiday to defend the way he's defending and hounding Chris Paul in the like unrecognizable Chris Paul and also go out and drop 25 on efficient shooting. So credit to Drew Holiday, but credit to Pat Connaughton for just kind of fighting and getting in there and grabbing boards and just doing his job and making, I mean, you have to, with that rotation and the way they're going to wall off Giannis in transition and even just in half court, you've got to be able to hit that shot. And it almost feels like Mike Breen, at one point, I don't remember if he was going to say it's good or if he was going to say bang, but there was one point where Connaughton had one that went like halfway down that Breen swore, you know, from the corner that Breen swore was in. And so it was kind of funny that later in the game, he did put that one down. But there were just so many little Matrix-like glitches in yesterday's game between the Chris Paul turnovers, you know, the foul that wasn't called, which to me, again, was just massive. And, you know, where you rank that in terms of importance when we talk about the five most important plays, like that would have been the most important play, even bigger than the block, if Milwaukee doesn't win that game, obviously. And then obviously, you know, Breen calling out a shot that goes down but doesn't go down. It's just rare that you see that from him, but or hear that from him. But Connaughton made it count when, you know, when it mattered most. And it was a huge performance for him yesterday, too.
Connaughton played 32 minutes, was plus 21.
Wow.
Brooke Lopez played 19 minutes and was minus 13. Those are just like polar opposites that really show that I don't think they're going to make a change to the starting lineup. I don't think that's really necessary right now. I think Brooke Lopez, the metrics are not good with Brooke Lopez, and he missed, I think, his first two or three threes, and they were pretty early in the game. But I wouldn't go away from Brooke Lopez, even though all the numbers are kind of like go away from Brooke Lopez in this series. I think he's just important when, like, Ayton would just feast if you just started small. And I think that puts too much strain for an entire game on Giannis. So yeah, shout out to Brooke Lopez. You're doing great. Okay, so series tied 2-2, Chris. I believe you had what was your prediction? Was it Suns in five?
My prediction was Suns in five if Giannis didn't play or didn't play the whole series. It was Suns in six if Giannis did play and looked himself. So the Suns are out of runway here if they're going to fulfill that prediction. I'd be a little bit surprised if they just took the next two based on how these last two games look. I'm still confident enough to pick them for the series, though.
I had Suns in six thinking Giannis would not play a minute in this series. And after watching the last two games, frankly, after watching the last three games, honestly, because I feel like game one, I almost ignore everything that happened in it because of how the Bucks defended and their strategy in that game. Like, it's just a completely different series almost. They switched, they had PJ Tucker on Chris Paul. Like, it's not the same sport almost. So I kind of throw that one away, and the Bucks have just been like physically dominant, and I don't know what adjustments you can make without Dario Saric healthy, and there's just no size if you're Phoenix. So like I kind of want to switch to Bucks in six, but I hate doing that in the middle of a series, so I'm just like not going to. But but yeah, it's really fun, and I think that it's going to be really tough for the Bucks to, I feel, I don't know, I don't want to be a victim of recency bias too much here, but the way Giannis has played, the energy that is required to slow Giannis down, which we saw in game four, they did a really good job with their scheme and how they packed the paint and how they got back in transition and all that. But I don't know, man. Like, the Bucks are just like, they're so good. Like, they have
The
the best
one
player in the series.
they do, I think what I'm curious to see now, Michael, is, and I mean, it's look, you could use this argument for either team. So it's not to say that this makes the Suns foolproof. There's just enough inconsistency from Middleton and Holiday for me to think that if Giannis is put in a situation where he has to do it by himself again, the way that he did in games two and three to some extent, that might be enough to get you over the hump if you can get Chris Paul to look enough like himself. To me, the anomaly in this series so far has been Chris Paul turning the ball over. Booker had been hot, previously in the last series. So like to some extent, he was due to cool down. He had his performance where he went off last game. Hell, he might be due for another game, not quite like that, but another good game. Middleton, you could argue, is due for another good game too, based on how poorly he was playing. Holiday certainly is, but I think at this point, if you get one or a duo, one team's duo looking bad again, I feel like the next team to really struggle with their duo or one of their two key scorers is going to be the team that loses this series. So if the Suns come out and Chris Paul still doesn't look right, and again, we don't know if that's anything to do with a hand or if it's just that Holiday is hounding him, if the pressure is getting to him, if it's, I don't think it's age, but if it's that, whatever it is, if it's that, and also look at the box score and look at Ayton's numbers yesterday, because that's been something that's been kind of, I won't say overlooked because people talked about it, I
We
think in
barely talked
game.
about him today at all.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought he played pretty well.
he did, but again, when you've got an 8-man rotation, Saric can't play, and Ayton finishes with 6 points. He rebounded his ass off. It wasn't that he wasn't doing anything. He was impactful. I mean, look, Drew was awful around the rim yesterday, but you credit some of that to the Suns and just being a deterrent. Ayton. It's going to be tough if like Ayton doesn't score. If he finishes in single figures, at that point you're by definition putting probably too much on Booker's shoulders if Paul's not going either. So at some point, I think if we have
What I'll
another
say
situation.
what I'll say real quick about that is like Ayton's scoring is dependent on the playmaking of Booker and Paul and the attention that they get when they go off. So it's like I'm not gonna, there are some plays here and there where they'll switch, the Bucks will switch, and then you know, Ayton will duck in, and some could criticize him for not getting better position and being a little bit more aggressive and calling for the ball against a smaller defender. But that's really not like...
That's not necessarily... No, not even that. But I mean, just whether it's him facing up, whether it's a hook shot, whether it's that you're trying to just get him something in the post if you don't have your pick and roll going because Chris Paul is looking over his shoulder the whole game. You got to get something that makes it a little bit easier for somebody else. And, you know, I know that a post up and, you know, back to the basket look, even a face up is not the easiest look. Ayton has not traditionally been a guy that you call upon to do that. It's normally born more out of Chris Paul snaking through in the pick and roll. I get that.
Right.
And Booker, I get that. But if you're going to get this little and you're going to be turning it over this much from Paul, if you're going to be asking that much of Booker, none of those guys are going to carry you that well for three games. Maybe together, which is what they were doing at the very beginning. But, you know, something's got to be a little bit different. I just kind of feel like the team that becomes too reliant on any one scorer here is probably going to be the team that I think loses the series. Also, Phoenix has two more games at home if this goes seven. So I feel a little bit better about that, the fact that nobody's dropped a home game yet. Maybe this will be one of those things where the first team, the series doesn't truly start until somebody loses at home. If Phoenix drops this next one at home and they've lost three games in a row, that puts them in a bad place. That would be a rough spot. So we'll see.
That's true. The Bucks obviously won game seven in Brooklyn. So they've done it before, but it's just going to be, it's going to be these last three games, two games. We'll see. I think it's going to go seven. Going to be a lot of fun. I'm very excited. This is one of the most fun conversations I've had talking about a single game like that I can remember. So thank you for indulging me, Chris. You're the best. That's going to do it for our show today. Apologies to our wonderful listeners. We didn't get to and wonderful emailers. We did not get to answer any, but this game was just too much. It really absorbed all of our energy and attention, but we'll roll those over into upcoming episodes. But please keep them coming to openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Chris and I will be back next week. Rohan and I will be back on Monday. Until then, everybody stay safe and everybody continue to enjoy the NBA Finals.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.